This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
What do the most successful growing businesses have in common? They're working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens, with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
Welcome, welcome, welcome back to the Bob Lefsetz podcast, the COVID-19 version. Yes, we're doing this remotely from my bedroom to the world. My guest today is manager Jake Gold, who happens to be in Toronto as we're speaking. Jake, how you doing?
Hey, Bob. It's the first time I've done this with you remotely, but it's fun. You know, seeing your face is good. It's been a while.
Absolutely. So, Jake, when is the live business going to return?
Well, it looks like, in my mind, there are some festivals that are saying this fall. I doubt it. I think the earliest is second quarter 2021. I think it'll be different country by country. I mean, Canada's in a little better shape, but I don't see the borders opening up that quickly. And if they do, it'll still be for other types of services. I think they already announced in LA that no large gatherings till the end of 2020, from what I heard.
Yeah, well, you know, it's a very interesting thing because Ezekiel Emanuel, and it's kind of interesting because he's the brother of both Rahm and Ari. And Ari, of course, is the major domo at WME. He has gone on record in the New York Times. He, of course, is the ethics professor at University of Pennsylvania. You see him on TV occasionally. And he has been posting in the New York Times. And he said he didn't expect concerts to come back to the fall of 2021. The mayor of Los Angeles said the beginning of 2021, which is what you said. But no one really knows.
No, I think the jury's still out on that. There are some people talking. I think some of the festivals that have announced that, you know, oh, we're going to reschedule for October, November, I think that's wishful thinking. I also think part of it is they don't want to have to give a whole bunch of refunds back to people if they say, oh, we're just rescheduling till next year, 2021. And saying, okay, you can keep your tickets, but they're good for next year.
Well, you know, let's slow down for a second there, because that's become a big issue, big scuttlebutt online about refunds.
Yeah.
And so what's your viewpoint on that? Because at first it seemed that Live Nation was going to give refunds. Now it seems that they're not.
Well, it's Ticketmaster, even though they're the same company, but they're operating as separate in that way. I think that in this stage, if people want a refund, they should be able to get a refund. I think there are some people that are saying, okay, when's the date going to be? And if it keeps getting pushed back, at some point, people aren't going to be available or they're not going to want to go out. I think they should be getting refunds. I also wonder if there are some promoters that are saying, okay, well, we're going to reschedule this for a year from now, hold your tickets for a year from now. Well, I know the money sits in trust. Someone's holding on to that money.
Well, you know, this has been a big change over the last couple of years in the music business, and that concert tickets can be sold in excess of a year out. And there's obviously an advantage to holding that money. But we're in an interesting era. We're in an era of musical chairs. Everybody is taking a hit. So, do we make the customer whole? because the customer is not whole at work. A lot of people are laid off or not laid off, you know, or put on furlough. And these are public companies in some cases. So if Ticketmaster, which as we say is part of Live Nation, if they give all the money back, that's a huge financial hit. Forget Ticketmaster, StubHub. Most people believe if StubHub gives all the money back, they're going to go out of business.
Well, that what did I read today that watch for a big announcement on Eventbrite for tomorrow. That Friday at 4 o'clock, there's going to be a big announcement with Eventbrite.
Well, by time this finally airs, we will know the essence of that. But do you think that Eventbrite, which is also a ticketing company, will give money back?
I don't know if they're going to give money back, or maybe it's more about to do with the company. I'm curious. You know, I was talking to someone today. We were making a date for a month away from now for another conversation. And they said, oh, that's the day I was supposed to go see Miss Saigon. But you wonder, like, what about the big Broadway shows that people buy tickets 8 months?
Well, you know, you're a manager. Let's stay with that, okay? Let's start with the basic concept. If these acts, and I'm not talking about acts that are playing clubs, you know, who are scraping by to begin with, but the big acts playing theaters, playing arenas, can they survive not working in excess of a year?
So most acts work on a cycle at some point where they could be working a record for a year and a half, then they're not on for a year, then they're back on for a year and a half. Those acts could probably survive because they have other sources of revenue.
Which are? What are those other sources?
Royalties, mostly royalties, whether it's airplay, whether it's sound exchange, whether it's all the other sources of revenues that artists can make.
Okay.
But we do know that a lot of those revenues are going to be much lower. I was sent a document today that from Europe about what's going on that side of things. Broadcast revenues are down. If broadcast revenues are down, then performing rights revenues are down.
Okay, so in Europe, it's a percentage as opposed to...
Same in Canada. It's a percentage of gross revenue. Yeah. Yeah. And like in Canada recently, the Canadian government... gave the broadcasters a $30 million, like, okay, hold off, you don't have to pay right now.
Okay, just so I know, because in America, we tend not to know the rest of the world, to what degree is radio in Canada, the CBC, controlled by the government, and to what degree is it private?
So the CBC is all not government, but it's, I guess it's public. Let's just call it public broadcast, but supported by the government. But most of real radio outside of the CBC is all private, all big radio chains. You got Chorus, you got Bell Media, Shaw, you got tons of big radio chains out there. So those are the commercial radio stations.
Oh, okay, so let's go back to acts. You know, there's some acts from the 80s, even the 70s, who play the sheds every year. And I was discussing this actually with Irving Azoff, and I said, why are they going out every year? He said, they need the money. So we all can expand to our lifestyle. You know, if you're planning on making $1 million and you make nothing, you're not going to be able to pay for all your houses.
Oh, listen, it's a problem. It's a problem for managers, too. It's a big problem on the management side. My business is not just mine, but almost all managers. It's decimated. There's nothing there. It's a real problem. You're seeing, I was talking to one manager the other day, and they manage basically theater size acts, and they have about four or five of them that are regularly touring. They figured that this year alone, from now till the end of the year, as the manager side is going to lose $700,000 in commission. Now, if you're a mid-size or small to mid-size management company with five employees, and that's your nut. That's the money you're going to make for a couple of years because your acts are on cycle right now. That can put you out of business in it if you don't have all that money. So it's not just the acts, it's the managers too that are going to go out of business.
So as a practical matter, because what we do know is live business is going to come back last, probably even after the movie theaters.
Right.
And because everybody is side by side. So the question becomes, how are these people going to make it through?
Well, that's the big thing. I mean, right now, you know, everybody like in the States, just like here, are all looking for government bailouts. They're looking for a way for the government to support the industry. It's a big problem. It's not going to go away that quickly. And we're being asked by government to say, okay, what's your short-term needs and what are your long-term needs? And when we're looking at the long-term needs, we're looking at two-year needs, not just six-month needs or nine-month needs. And it's a big problem. And especially for the artists. I mean, we recently did a survey up here amongst artists and managers, and, 75% or more of the artists and managers' income came from live. That's a problem.
Okay. Now, the in the U.S., the music business has gotten together to try to get money. In Canada, is the business already getting money?
So what they've done in terms of, they've done not sector business, because they look at culture as one sector. So that includes film, TV, because we've always had a lot of grants and things like that for IP. So if you're a record company making records, you can get grants. If you're an independent artist, you can get money to make records, touring, stuff like that. But there's no money per se to cover lost revenue. And if the lost revenue is how you're supposed to pay all your bills, it's a problem. There has been some money put out there, $2,000 a month for self-employed people. But right now it's only for 4 months. There's talk about that being extended for longer. There's grants, there's labor grant subsidies. So you can get subsidized for up to 75% of your salaried employees. There's loans that being offered, not as big as the ones that are being offered in the States, but we have a different size economy. So there's some loans that are partially repayable and partially forgivable, those kinds of things. But every day they keep announcing new versions of the same thing, because every time they announce something, people come back and say, well, that's not going to work. That's not going to work. Today they announced a rent subsidy for businesses, like restaurants that are going to be closed, let's say, for 3, 4, 5 months, but their landlords still need to get paid. So now there's a rent subsidy, but the way they positioned it is they'll give the money to the landlords so they won't have to charge the tenants. But everyone's wondering, well, how are you going to know if your landlord actually got that subsidy or not? So there's a question on what are the checks and balances there. And it's a moving target, because everyone's still trying to figure out how this is all going to work.
Okay, let's start at the very beginning. Have people actually gotten money from the government as we talk?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Let's just assume you're a bar band. And let's say you can play outside your own town, but you're playing, let's make the number somewhat big, somewhere between 75 and 350 seats a night.
Right.
Can you get money for that?
Yes. You can't get money replacement for that, but you can get, each person in the band can get $2,000 a month.
Okay, but if someone is self-employed and they're not in the music business, they're going to get the same $2,000?
Yeah, like I have a friend who was a server, who's an actor, who makes her money serving when she's not acting. She was on unemployment insurance, or employment insurance, let's call it. But when the $2,000 came out, it actually worked out to higher than her employment insurance. So they actually put her on the $2,000 a month instead of the employment insurance. When that $2,000 a month runs out, she'll go back to the other insurance. But for now, they may be extending it. I mean, it's supposed to be for 4 months, going back to the middle of March. So most people in the arts are going on that program for now. And it's $8,000 minimum that they're going to get.
Okay. So in America, we had it's funny, everybody keeps labeling, Paul Krugman said it's not truly a stimulus, but there were these, this $2 trillion amount.
Right.
And there's been a big argument over where this money is coming from and whether there should be more money. Is there a big argument about that in Canada?
Yeah. In fact, we're going to the government over the next couple of days and early next week to present what the short-term needs are for our sector and what the long-term needs are for our sector. And I think they're probably going to come up with sector-specific relief programs across the board, because you're hearing it. Oil and gas have their own problems. Obviously, the restaurant business has their own problems. We're approaching it. There's been a coalition that we've worked together on other issues like copyright and things like that. So it's going to be all the industries together as a coalition trying to talk to the government about the needs of our sector.
Okay, I guess being more specific, is there a backlash from more conservative people saying this is too much money being spent?
We haven't heard none of that yet. I think that, interestingly enough, I haven't seen it. You know, I'm active on Twitter. I'm paying attention to the news. I'm even watching the conservative. You know, we have a liberal government in power, but if you don't understand the parliamentary system, the second party is the conservatives. Whatever they've been talking about, the one thing they're not talking about is not spending more money. They're talking about how do we get more money into the hands of people and things like that. So everyone's on the same page that it's all about relief, 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 relief.
Okay, not that you can answer this question, but where's this money going to come from?
Well, you know, they have this big printing press and they just print it out like in Money Heist, you know, how they printed the money and then the money just appeared.
Okay. What are you watching? What are you streaming, Jake?
Well, on a couple of your recommendations, I went through Money Heist. I was an Ozark fan already. I went through Babylon Berlin. I haven't decided to start anything yet. I saw an ad for something and I was like, did I see that? And I went, oh yeah, I saw the whole thing because it's like, it's all a blur. I will tell you, I just watched the Gordon Lightfoot documentary, which was really, really good. And I was thinking of you when I watched it because I didn't realize he went to college. He went to music college in Los Angeles. That's where he went to school.
God, I didn't know that.
He went to like some special music school at 18, 19 years old in Los Angeles. And he was in like this, he was the singer in this big band that was from the school. And it's all in the doc. And I was like, I had no idea about all that.
Well, my question becomes, how come all the conversation in the media and amongst friends is about TV as opposed to music?
Well, it's an interesting thing that you say that because we know streaming is down. Like streaming is down.
No, it's gone back up. It's gone back. That was a guy. I got a big bone to pick. He's a nice enough guy, but that's Tim Ingham. He's also in Rolling Stone. He fancies himself an analyst, and he looks at data, and it seems to me he comes up with a theory and then has the data to establish that. Just after he published that music streaming was down, Spotify put out a press release saying that was not true. And then this last week, there's a story that streaming has gone up.
Yeah, streaming signups have gone up. Talking to all the, I'm telling you.
No, the actual number of tracks has gone up.
I'm talking to all the independent labels that I'm on a regular, like every other day conference call and email with. And in fact, I was just on a big email trail with all of them before we even got on here. All of them are saying their numbers, it's down.
Well, I can't speak to those specific people, and I'd rather not argue while we're doing this podcast. But one thing we do know is it's irrelevant, because as long as people are paying their subscribing fees, whether volume goes up or down, there's still the same pot of gold.
Right, right. But it does matter. I guess maybe if you're dealing with a whole bunch of independent labels that have more independent type acts that don't live in the pop world, that maybe in the pop world it's gone way up, but on
that goes to another point, and this has got little to do with COVID-19. But when you look at the streaming numbers, it's sort of like the rest of the world, certainly United States, and there's winners or losers. If you're Drake, who happens to be from Toronto, or someone of that caliber, you're making more money on singles than you ever were. But if you're not Drake and you're someone who's playing Americana, you can't live off the royalties.
No, no. And in fact, the other thing that people aren't even realizing is that there a lot of money is being made on the sync side of things from putting your music in film and television. Well, all the productions are down. There's nothing going on. So that money goes to artists on the writer's side. It goes to publishers. It goes to labels on the master side. So we're missing out on a lot of that money, too. So it's not.
Right. And as I say, in Canada, they're giving $2,000 to everybody. Supposedly, everybody in America is getting $1,200, although there seems to be some bumps on the road to them getting that.
But don't you get an autograph with it?
Yes, we do.
You get
so, without making it specifically about our president, do you think this is a good time or a bad time for developing acts?
Well, I think there's a lot of opportunities there. When I've sat on a lot of Zoom gatherings amongst, I'm the vice president of the MMF, which is the Music Managers Forum, which didn't really catch on as much in the U.S. as it has around the rest of the world. It's very strong in Canada and very strong in the U.K. and a lot of other territories. And so we've been hosting a lot of these get-togethers with other young managers. And what we've been saying is now's a great time to cultivate an audience. If you can get music out there, if you can get content out there, if you can do live streams, things like that, you could probably gain some fans and build some fans. So when you actually do have an opportunity to release some music and get out and play in front of people, maybe your constituency will be that much bigger because you have somewhat of a captive audience. And just like watching, you know, streaming TV series or movies, people are constantly looking for something new to check out. So I think.
However, you know, if you check out Live Nation, I was dealing with Michael Rapino, and I suggested he did an excellent job of listing the streams. And what we do know is just like streaming music, it's kind of overwhelming. So many people are streaming shows.
Yeah, but there's just as many people that don't want to watch the biggest artist out there and want to discover something new are the same people that go to the grimy clubs because they want to find a new band that they're into. And that's where you're going to cultivate your audience from anyways. And at some point, it's going to be word of mouth anyway. Someone watches it, another friend tells another friend, and you know, you're building your audience. But to sit there and do nothing is not the answer, is what I'm
saying. Okay, you're a manager. You famously built the Tragically Hip. If you had an act today, an act that could sustain on its income, let's say it sold theaters, 2,500 to 3,000 seats, what would you be telling that act to do today?
I'd be telling them to engage their audience and keep them interested and keep them engaged with, you know, doing some live streams. The hip hop world right now, I don't know if you've seen this, Bob, but some of them are doing these live streams, and they're attracting 350,000 people to the live streams with tip jars, and they're actually generating a lot of revenue from people. Even if people put in a dollar, it's $350,000. So there is ways to do it out there, especially if they can't get to it. So depending on the size of your act, if you have an audience and your audience really wants to see you and you're offering something that they probably would never get to see anyways, because if you think about it, if you're an act playing theaters, but now you're going to do acoustic performances in a living room, a lot of people would be, yeah, I'll pay to see that. People are charging through Patreon. They're charging, you know, $20 or $10 or tip jars. I think there's a lot of ways to generate income. I don't think you're not going to make what you're making selling out a theater.
You were managing an act and you're trying to both sustain and grow an audience, would you say to give it away for free or to charge?
I would say to charge for some things and other things to give away. But I'd also, you know, one of the ways you can give it away by saying, you know, provide us with your phone number so you can be part of our text team, or provide us with your email address so we can help build the database so we have a way to connect with you with other things. Maybe you make special merch just for quarantine, you know, if you can find someone to print it. Or maybe I know someone that's working on a system. You know, there's all kinds of ways to do it where you can, you know, if you look at the way some of the crowdfunding things worked, where people pay in advance to buy merch, and when the merch is made, they get it sent to them. So there's other ways to generate that kind of income. I think it's easier for bands that actually already have a following because they have an army that they can enlist, especially if their fans are used to seeing them all the time. With the younger bands, you gotta work that much harder because you're trying to build a constituency.
Okay. Now, what do we know? That when everybody in the middle of March started to hunker down in their houses, people started to do these live streams, meaning acts started to do the live streams.
Right.
At first, it was people with a following, people were known. Then all the wannabes came in.
Right.
I'm hearing from them. They're trying to grow their audience. Since we're talking about a lockdown that will certainly be 9 months, could be the better part of 18 months, do you think that we'll see, just like flattening the curve, we'll see a reduction of these free live streams and an increase in paid live streams?
I think that's the only way it's going to go. I think that it's a re-education in a lot of ways. I think one of the things that may come out of this overall is people actually learning how to do stuff online that for a lot of people that never actually played online, whether it's ordering groceries or anything like that. I think there's a re-education, and they say it takes 21 days to change someone's behavior on what they did before and what they're going to do now. Think about 18 months of what that's going to be like. And I think we may get to a point where social distancing may not be the same. So you actually could put a band together in one room. Like if you think about, look at WWE, their business model is pay-per-view. Well, how different is this if it's pay-per-view? And no one ever thought pay-per-view would work in music, but if that's all you can get, maybe you would pay for it.
Well, it's interesting because the WWE is considered an essential business in Florida. So, and a lot of people are arguing whether their business is essential.
No comment.
But
to their point, their business model has always been a pay-per-view, right?
Right.
Now, pay-per-view concerts historically haven't worked. Remember the Who final show in 1981, which was pay-per-view,
right.
Or 82, whatever it was. I was at it. And I thought it was going to be the last time I saw The Who. but I don't know how successful that was. But you could still go and see shows if there's no other options.
Well, what we do know is House of Blues concerts, that was originally an internet play. And that was a big component in terms of filming live stuff. They outfitted all the venues.
Right.
And it didn't work. And they sold it to Live Nation ultimately.
Right.
And we also have Phish using Nugsnet. It appears that Phish fans and other fans of the Allman Brothers, there is a very small hardcore who will watch online. Now, of course, for once-in-a-lifetime events, and it turns out like it, this one may literally be a once-in-a-lifetime event, which was the final Dead shows in Chicago, they also did well with pay-per-view.
Right.
Staying with pay-per-view, what's an appropriate price?
Well, I guess it's going to be depending on the act. I mean, if an act says, I'm going to do a show, 12 shows a year, once a month, versus a one-time show, it's a different thing. Obviously you pay more for exclusivity and you pay more for availability. I think you have to look at it that way. If the Dead were only doing one show, then people would pay a lot more for the ticket than if they were touring that show.
That's kind of like pay-per-view boxing.
Right.
Switching gears a little bit. What's the future for the movie business in an era where the studios are the theaters are closed?
Well, what did I just read? That AMC is filing for Chapter 11?
We're talking about two levels of business. Many people are unsophisticated when it comes to how these public corporations work. They go to Chapter 11 because they can't pay their debts, and they try to reorganize.
Right.
It's Chapter 7, I believe, which is permanent, go out of business.
Right.
But what I'm really asking is there a future in pay-per-view movies on demand on the flat screen?
Well, it's interesting you say that. I think for certain kinds of movies, I think, the doc side of thing, I think, will suffer. The Hot Dog Festival in Toronto, which is one of the best documentary festivals in the world, just announced they're going with their regular slate of films. And And what they've done is they've made broadcast deals with all the broadcasters in Canada to carry those films. So the revenue's coming in. It actually gives these documentaries a bigger audience than by having them play, you know, for a week in a theater somewhere. So it's not technically the same kind of film festival because people aren't going to movie theaters. But for the actual filmmakers, they're getting a bigger audience out of it. So,
well, my question would be, because I'm unfamiliar, that would ultimately be free to the audience in Canada with those documentaries. You're not paying $20 for a 48-hour or 5-day window to watch.
No, but you're paying for your cable bill or your streaming costs or whatever it is. Like, I saw an ad for a movie this morning, and it looked like, and then it said opening this day, and then very quickly there was a flash at the end of the commercial. And it said only on Netflix. But up until I saw that, I thought, whoa, they're opening a movie somewhere. And then it was only on Netflix. But it was.
Well, it's interesting because the New York Times and the LA Times, the two entertainment centers in the United States, they were reviewing movies all the way through March, which made no sense because right. No one could go to see them. But now I was noticing, because movies tend to open on Friday, I was noticing last Friday, the movies they reviewed all were available on demand.
Right.
Personally, not that I watch movies or television hours and hours every day, but I'm paying for so many services. I've got my cable bill. I got my Netflix bill. I've got my Amazon bill. Are people really going to pay for video on demand on a one-shot basis, or do they want it baked into Netflix, like you just said?
Well, it's interesting because I do both. If there's a movie I really want to see that I want to see now that hasn't come out and I'm a sample of one, but I know other people that do the same, that hasn't come out on Netflix or hasn't come out on any streaming services yet, but I want to see it now. I'll pay the $5.99 or $6.99 to watch the movie at home. And if it's in 4K, even better. I've done that many times.
How often in a quarter, how often do you do that?
I'm doing it probably nowadays, which is more often, but I'm doing it once a week.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cb for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
You deserve a moment to yourself every single day. And a delicious bite of a Keebler Sandies can give you that comforting pause. Give yourself a delicious escape from the afternoon with the melt-in-your-mouth magic of a Keebler Sandies. This magic is baked into simple shortbread cookies by Ernie and the Keebler Elves. So as life continues to fly by, make the most of your me moment. Take a pause and enjoy a Keebler Sandies.
Okay, so my question would become, because you're talking about windowing there, a movie
right.
that is played theatrically and is ultimately going to go to cable, and then we'll see it forever
right.
for free on some free channel. My question would become, that movie has probably been the beneficiary of $50 to $100 million in marketing. Can you open a movie only on video on demand? Can you reach the customers? That's the first question. They have to know about it before they pay for it.
Right. Well, I think, like, if you're talking about the new Star Wars and movies like that with hardcore fans, that if they know this is how they're going to see it and it's going to cost them $7, they'll probably do it, and they'll probably have giant viewing parties, you know, with couple of their friends that are in their family. You know, I think, you know, my brother, he buys movies. He actually owns them, right? He buys them.
Well, in what format? He's buying them from iTunes. He's buying them at disc.
He's buying them on Google. And he buys.
What's the logic there?
He wants to own them so he can see them over and over again. Like he loves his sci-fi movies, and he wants to own them so he can see them over and over again. He buys them.
You know, as I say, I'm someone who doesn't read a book twice, almost never watches a movie twice, but I believe that's a fetishism, or just a fetish in this particular case, because everything's available on demand. You know, I hear from people all the time, oh, I'm not signing up for Spotify, A, because what if I'm out of range? Well, the sophisticated people, and you don't have to be that sophisticated, know you can sync it to the handset, and as long as your handset has juice, doesn't matter whether there's a signal.
Right.
But I believe, you know, that we live in an on-demand culture, which brings me to another facet of your life where you gave up your car.
Yeah. Yeah.
Tell my audience about that.
Well, I got in a car accident and my car was written off. And
this was how long ago?
2 years ago, October, I think it was. Maybe 3 years ago. Maybe 3 years ago now.
I think it's 2 years ago.
Yeah. And what happened was, I had been thinking about getting rid of my car, and the accident kind of made the decision for me, because when I looked at getting a new car, and then looked at what it would cost me to take Ubers, use public transit, which I'd been using anyways because parking downtown Toronto was a pain in the ass, and the fact I could rent out my parking spot and saving on insurance and gas and upkeep and everything else, I was ahead of the game by about $10,000, $12,000 a year, and I didn't have to worry about a car. And if I need a car for anything really important, I just rent it. So I live in the city. I live in the core. One of the reasons I chose to live in the core is I'd lived in New York, and I liked that lifestyle of not having a car and walking places. So I chose to live like that, and I wanted to live that same lifestyle I had when I was living in New York. And again, cars are easy to access if you need one. Between Ubers and public transit. Nowadays, I'm not spending any money. I'm not going out for dinner. I'm not taking any Ubers anywhere. So actually, costs are way down for me now.
Let's drill down on the costs. When you had your old BMW, was it completely paid for, or are you paying per month?
No, by the time I smashed it up, it had been paid for a little over a year. So,
okay, so what did you estimate your cost of owning a car for a year and relative to what it's cost on?
Well, if I had to make payments on it, you know, it was costing me, you know, $400 or $500 a month plus insurance, which was another couple of $100 a month, plus gas, plus parking, plus, you know, upkeep, which is, you know, your wear and tear on any car, whether it's tires or oil, you know, whatever you're spending. So, If I was going to get a new car and have to pay payments on a car with all the costs in, it was going to be close to $20,000 a year to carry a car. And I figured that if I spent even $30 a day on an Uber, that's only $10,000 a year. Right.
And how much did you ended up spending? About 10K a year?
No, not even close. Not even close, because I work.
What's your rating?
My office is in my house. So
what's your rating on Uber?
I think I'm a 4.75.
Okay, so you're a nice guy in the Uber.
More often than not, except for the guys that don't know which way they're going. So I tend to be a bit of a backseat driver on directions. So
yeah, but if you got 4.7, you know, they're not too angry about it.
I'm a friendly backseat driver.
So to what degree are you self-quarantining?
I've been out twice in 33 days, and that was just to go to the store to pick up last minute stuff. I've been ordering my groceries in. I've been cooking. My brother dropped off a mask to me, but he just left it at my door. My assistant's still working, so he'll pick up stuff and leave it at my door. If I have mail for him, I'll leave it at my door. We don't actually have any contact. Been doing a lot of Zoom meetings. I had a Zoom birthday party, which was fun. It's like over 30 people showed up, which probably be more than if I had a regular party. And people came from, there were people on it from all over North America and even a couple from Europe. It was pretty late there, but they showed up. So it was interesting. You know, it was, that was kind of overwhelming actually to have that much attention. I did a Zoom Seder with you and your family. Right. So I got to meet all of your family. So that was fun. And offer my Canadian perspective on things.
Which they enjoyed.
Yeah.
So how is, you know, you seem very upbeat now. How is your state of mind in the sequestration?
Well, I had a session with my shrink today. So of course I'm upbeat today. Overall, you know what? Because I work from home, it's not that much of a disruption for me in terms of being in the house all the time. I'm used to it. I've been doing it now for 2.5 years. I think, and I'm communicating with a lot of people. You know, I'm FaceTiming with different friends every day, which I never did before. Now people are, instead of just texting you or calling you, they're FaceTiming you. Like it's like, you know, you have to message them back and say, hey, I'm not ready to FaceTime right now or whatever. So I think we're actually communicating a lot more than we have been. I mean, how are you finding it in that way?
Well, as I say, I go up and down on a couple of things. I go up and down on fear. First, I was very fearful, and then I wasn't fearful for a while. And then I read that crazy case of the doctor on the front lines of Washington State. They had to put him in the cardiac unit. And I said, you know, this could be really bad. And of course, some people we know died. So I wax and wane on the fear. I haven't seen anybody face to face in excess in real life, you know, in excess of a month. But
besides your girlfriend.
Yes, who lives in the house. We live together.
Right. Right.
In terms of state of mind, you know, well, I'm very busy. You know, I'm busier than I normally am. And I live in Los Angeles, you know, those hours in the car I'm missing out on. It's like Howard Stern, you know, I'm not as addicted as I once was only because I don't have that window. However,
I haven't listened to Stern. I have the app and I pay for it to listen to your show and to listen to Stern. But I've been busy too. I haven't listened to Stern. Normally in the mornings, I'll have it on. I'd be listening on my phone or on my computer, you know, before I actually sit down at my desk. But now I'm answering emails and I'm messaging with friends and how are you doing? How'd you do last night? Everyone's checking in on each other and I'm playing words with friends with random people, but it's good brain exercise to play Scrabble. So
staying on Stern, he had Cuomo on, which was very good. You could get on demand. But then again, Cuomo has appeared in many places, especially with his brother. But I got to the first, I felt it was Groundhog Day. It was same day every day. And then I didn't quite know what day it was. And then the other day I'd worked really hard and then I was burned out. The problem is with modern communications, you can never disconnect.
Right.
From Monday morning to Friday afternoon. I mean, I'm hearing from people 24/7. You have a hard time saying, well, I'm not going to have my phone right by me. If I don't have my phone right by me, then I really can't concentrate. I mean, actually, if I have my phone right by me, I really can't concentrate on something else. But if I leave my phone in the other room, I'm afraid it's not only FOMO, it's business. And as you say, it's our way to connect. And then you say, well, I'm going to lay low on the weekends. But then everybody, I mean, this is the way it normally is. But I'm trying, you know, say everybody tracks you down on the weekend anyway. I'm trying to see where the normalization is.
But you're more productive because you're not spending all that time. So you're basically living my lifestyle now where you're not in the car. Right.
Right.
So you found all these extra hours to write, to read, to do the things that you didn't do before.
And well, as I say, it expanded. You know, the interesting thing is the other day I found I had more time to listen to new music. Generally speaking, I listen to new music when I'm hiking. And the story with new music is unless you're calm, everything sounds like shit.
Right.
And, you know, you pull up the Spotify top 50, say, you know, the hit to shit ratio is terrible. This is another thing I can't rant enough about. You know, everyone thinks that playlists have solved the problem. No, it used to be DJs were experts and they played certain songs. Now these playlists, there's so many crappy songs. Who can listen to that many crappy songs? However, I was listening to some songs the other day, even that I'd heard before, and they resonated more because I was calm. Now, of course, if you're driving in the car and you're listening to music opposed to Howard, you have a similar thing, but it's not like the old days because there are so many stations, certainly on satellite radio, and you can stream your phone. You know, this is something that's overwhelming to me. In terms of new music, there is great new music out there, but connecting with the people who actually like it is so difficult. And as I say, you can waste so much time looking for the great stuff. Same thing with television. I read about television. People inundate me with shows. Some of them are good, and then you end up watching a show. I mean, I started watching the show, which was rated the number one foreign show in the New York Times, called Prisoners of War, an Israeli show about two guys who come back from being held prisoners of war 17 years in Syria.
Right.
Very intense. But I feel like I could be the only person watching it.
Well, I'm going to watch it now that you said that. But Fauda's coming back this week.
Well, Fauda's coming back on the 26th in the U.S., and also Bosch is coming back the day after we have this conversation. Let's go back to the music business for a couple of seconds here. You were one of the first people to embrace the internet. If you have a developing act now, what platforms should you use? How important is social media? How often should you be posting?
Well, I think right now, because the audience is there, I think you could be posting more because they're chewing it up so fast. I still think Instagram and Instagram Live seems to be the place where people are going. You're seeing bands that are breaking stuff off TikTok and stuff like that. I think Twitch is becoming a big thing, but I think that tends to lean more in the pop world. I'm not seeing a lot of indie acts and rock bands doing stuff on TikTok, you know? So I still think Instagram, Facebook to a certain degree, just because there's an audience there, regardless of the age and everything else. But I do think that Instagram has got to be the number one place to be right now.
Now, you personally are very active on Twitter. Is that just a personal thing, or is there something that you can break bans there, or you believe other people should be on it?
I think it's a great source for information. I think you can build an audience there and you can direct them to your other places. I haven't seen one live stream on Twitter yet. it's not.
Well, they broadcast football games. There's a way to do it, but I agree with you. I haven't seen it.
Yeah. So I haven't seen it. Oh, by the way, in Canada, Fauda starts today.
I envy you.
Yeah. I'll be going deep.
Great show.
Yeah, but back to I still think Instagram. It's interesting if you go on Instagram now, and I noticed that you recently got on Instagram. If you go on Instagram, you know, in the top of the app is all the stories, and the stories used to be one person, used to be all one person just doing their thing. Now that the top of the app is where the stories are, it's all live. Everything is live. Multiple people that you know are on that live stream, because obviously you know a lot of friends who know other friends. And so now all you're seeing is Instagram Live nonstop. So everyone's going there. There's this app, House Party. I don't know if you've heard of it.
I've heard of it, yeah, but tell me about it.
So you can only put it. It actually was started a while ago, and it was bought in 2019 by the guys who own Fortnite, because they were noticing that gamers were communicating on House Party while they were gaming. The only thing about it, you can only put 8 people on it. But maybe that's another place where artists can go and say, hey, we're going to do a concert for only 8 people. It's going to be really exclusive. Or for 7 people, and I'm going to be the 8th. I'm the artist. And I'm going to do a house concert for you. No different than when, you know, a lot of artists are doing these house concert tours. So maybe that's another thing that artists could do. Is they
could certainly charge a lot for that.
Right. And the thing about House Party that's different than some of the other things, Zoom, if you send a link, anybody can just click the link and get in on it. House Party, if I'm on a conversation with you on House Party, I can hit the lock and it means no one else can come in. And we're in a locked room. And if you go onto the app, it'll say Jake and Bob are in a locked room. You know, or if they're only connected with me on the app, it'll just say Jake's in a locked room and it won't tell them who I'm with. So they can't enter the room.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you, from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
You deserve a moment to yourself every single day. And a delicious bite of a Keebler Sandies can give you that comforting pause. Give yourself a delicious escape from the afternoon with the melt-in-your-mouth magic of a Keebler Sandies. This magic is baked into simple shortbread cookies by Ernie and the Keebler Elves. So as life continues to fly by, make the most of your me moment. Take a pause and enjoy a Keebler Sandies.
As I say, in terms of social media, if you even want to call it social media, yes, I'm a dedicated follower of Twitter. In terms of the other formats, you know, I've had an account at Instagram. I didn't post for years, and I did post a couple of times. It's an interesting time because it's also, because of all the messages, it's harder than ever to build an audience. But I found that these platforms are littered with self-promotion, which I find a turnoff.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the other thing, is that it's how do you engage your audience now without coming off as inauthentic or unauthentic? Like, you know, authenticity, people are really clamoring for authenticity. And it's one of the things that drives me crazy. You know, it's the Instagram model who spouts off beautiful things about wellness, and here's a picture of me, of my ass in a thong. It's like, it doesn't work for me. There's no connection there. And I think that, that, you know, it's the line that seems to be running around everywhere now is read the room, is, you know, you got to be able to know how to market and how to engage your fans in an authentic way right now, and you got to be smart about it. You're seeing a lot of ads. I saw someone on Twitter the other day talk about all these ads coming from the big corporations about how fast they're turning these ads around to buy my product in these trying times. Like, you know, who's writing the copy and how difficult a job that is to write that kind of copy. I think everyone's still trying to figure it out. The one thing I am doing more often than not is I think I'm giving people the benefit of the doubt, because I know everyone's trying to figure it out and everyone's a little lost, and some people are doing it really well and some people aren't doing it as well. And I think maybe we should be a little bit more forgiving to those people because they haven't figured it out yet.
Well, however, there's been a huge, you talk about reading the room, huge celebrity backlash, you know, to Gal Gadot and Imagine with her other celebrities, David Geffen and his yacht. And that's an interesting situation, because in reality, that's been going on for years, in that the celebrities are not, don't have the status and the adoration they used to have before.
Well, I think it's interesting you're saying that, because I read an interesting article in Vanity Fair. I don't know if I sent it to you or not, but it was all about, you know, that this could be the death of the so-called influencer.
Right.
Right.
And I did see that. Yes.
And whether, and that goes with artists too, because there are plenty of artists out there who have marketed themselves more as sort of an influencer or someone who does this one thing, but they also do these other things, and music may not be their number one thing, but they're trying to sell music off the back of what they're known for. You know, I think the only one that's ever done it really successful and managed to come out the other side was Jack Johnson, who was not a artist when he first started.
Right.
But most of the rest, we kind of have looked at and went, there's not a lot of credibility there. I think that the influences who are, as I like to say, famous for being famous, may not last through. The ones that are really, really big in the Kardashian level, I think they're Teflon at this point.
Well, it's interesting because in today's New York Times style section, they have a whole story how the fashion business is being hurt by the postponement of Coachella. Now, this really shows that it's not about the music. They happen to have a picture of an influencer there wearing her outfit, that you go there to parade your look. And if the other thing, which is sort of amazing with fast fashion, they say a lot of these people just buy the clothes for the weekend and literally throw them away.
Yeah.
However, Jake, why are Canada and Toronto such epicenter of musical innovation and stature?
You mean why is The Weeknd and Drake number one and two on the charts this week?
Well, that's, and before that, you had Broken Social Scene from Montreal, et cetera.
Arcade Fire, you mean, from Montreal. Right. Yeah. I think one of the things that we, like a lot of European countries, for what it's worth, is we invest in the arts as a country. We have a great system of supporting the arts, from grants to companies, grants to artists. There's infrastructure grants. If you think about it, if a record company, independent record company, is getting a grant to make a record, they're able to give the artist an advance. It's not a major label type advance, but it's also not gonna have as much debt to recoup. We're supporting recording studios. We're supporting video production. There's grants for film and television, so those people will get more money for their grants if they use Canadian music, because you get based on how much Canadian content you put in your films dictates how much of the grant you can get. So there's all kinds of stuff like that. So when you look at that, how it supports an overall ecosystem, and then here we are kind of a training ground, because we can get our feet wet. And, you know, most Canadian bands that tour are really good live bands. And a lot of them, by the time they get to America, they're well-formed entities that know how to go out there on the road. And I remember in the days of the Hip, when we would go into places in America to play, they would all say, wow, like, you guys are like really together. You know, we'd be playing 300 seat clubs, and most of the bands playing 300 seat clubs were not that together. Like, you know, we were like a machine, and we were also nice to the people there. And they would be like, and they'd be like, you guys must be Canadian. You're nice. You know, it was like, that was, I hate to say it, but that's what we used to get all the time. And so we're kind of, we have this great, great training ground per se, to get it going. Now, that wasn't always the case, but it's almost like a proof of concept in a lot of ways. And everyone's looking for proof of concept today. So that has a big part to do with it too.
Okay, as we're doing this remotely in our COVID-19 initiation, anything we haven't covered?
I don't know if there's anything we haven't covered, but I want to ask you a couple of questions since we're back and forth. One of the things I noticed is obviously, and for a lot of reasons, and you and I have discussed this, you know, ourselves internally, let's just call it, you know, you're really getting political these days. You're spending a lot of time on politics. I noticed you backed off the last few days, and you've been writing, there's, you know, back to more music stuff and everything else. How are you dealing with the crap that you're getting? I saw I saw one post, and it gave me shivers. The guy with the guns that said he's coming for
Sean it. Marmello was his name, and yeah. I continue to hear from him.
And you continue to print his name too. Has anybody written back and said, I know that guy?
Like, no, everyone's written about, because, you know, today everybody's searchable online.
Right.
So they can see that he is a country singer from, I forget the state, but I have not heard from anybody who knows him. In terms of writing about politics, there's a lot of things going on. Let me try to break it down a little bit. One, that is the story of our time.
Right.
Just like music was the canary in the coal mine for digital disruption, and it's amazing. If you look at television, the New York Times did a number of streaming services. There's like 30 pay streaming services. It's just crazy. We can get everything on one service,
right?
Although there are a few services.
Right.
And we have it figured out. Now, the fascinating thing is all of the people who said the internet is going to kill the music business. That was untrue. CD did not survive. They were left in the past. So is that equivalent in this political thing? You know, are we going to see a breakthrough? Are we going to see a change in government in the United States? And it's literally life and death. So what do I know? If I write about, we'll call it politics or the coronavirus, response is voluminous, just like in the days of Napster.
Right.
If I write about music, it's much, much smaller. I get all these daily newsletters. A record of the day from England, Music Ally. And the funny thing is, they're not shorter whatsoever. It's just the news is more irrelevant. So ultimately, it comes down to the music, and we're focusing on music at this time. Yes, by writing about politics, I lose some subscribers. There's a lot of thoughts. I could do 20 minutes on this, but I won't. First, if you listen to the audience, you're screwed. If you're an artist, you have to do what resonates. The classic person here being Neil Young. If you look back at Neil Young's history, he had a gigantic album with Harvest, which was his fourth album. After the Gold Rush before that was pretty big. He went on an arena tour and he played all new music and would say, and then he said, okay, I'm going to play something you know. And you've heard already. And then he played a song from the same gig.
Right.
Needless to say, he could not play arenas thereafter. But people are still interested in the new music of Neil Young. They're not interested in the new music of Crosby, Stills, or Nash. Certainly not in that volume. So the other thing was I did a podcast with Pete Tong, and this has really resonated with me. We're talking about his live career. Pete, you know, has got many enterprises, doing very well.
I listened to it. It was fabulous.
But one thing he said that really has stuck with me is that, okay, his live business is not as big as it used to be. And I said, well, could it be that big again? And he said he would have to reinvent himself. Now, this is an interesting thing in the music business. The classic acts, they're going out and they're playing the old tunes. Lucratively, if that's a word, it's, you know, they're making a lot of money. No one wants to hear the new music. How fulfilling is it for those people? If you look at the legends, David Bowie, I was there early, huge fan, saw Ziggy Stardust. He constantly changed. Some things you like, some things you didn't, but he is the name that remains. The other thing, I remember Brian Adams talking about Canadian. Everyone said, oh, your music is not current enough. You're not taking topics on. And then he made an album doing that, and it was nowhere near as successful. Then he went back to the old formula. So I believe I have to do what resonates. And what I have found is, because I save all my email, the people who are bitching are always the same people bitching. Ironically, the people who email you, who disagree with you on politics, they don't sign off. They're just working the refs. So
those are the same people that hate Trump but follow Trump, and the same people that hate Pelosi but follow Pelosi. Like, they're the same people, right?
Well, as I say, in terms of the right wing, they're certainly there trying to work the refs. I hear from these people some every day. Okay. You would think if they didn't like what I write, they would sign off, but they don't. But yesterday, I sent a number of things, and I'm always wary. I used to send up to 5 things a day, but I sent 3 things in a day, and usually inherently you get sign offs. The third thing was political. I didn't lose a single subscriber. Okay. And net.
Right, net.
But what I've also, you know, you start to learn. Interestingly, I lose most subscribers when I print a mailbag of all the viewpoints. I can't exactly explain why. Whether people are just overwhelmed. If they hear it from me, they're okay. If they hear it from all these other people on both sides, somehow it overwhelms them. You know, they can't read anymore.
I don't know why they have to unsubscribe. They can just delete. You know, like, okay, I don't like mailbag. I'm not going to read mailbag. Or maybe they're in the mailbag and they realized it afterwards and they decided, I'm going to unsubscribe. Be interesting to see how many of your unsubscribers were people you mentioned in the mailbag to see if there's a correlation there.
Never. But I have had people send me heinous email and sign off, and I printed their heinous email. You always wonder if they read it.
Yeah, but, yeah, I know that. I have another question for you.
Wait, Jim, before I go there, I want to say one thing, is that the people who are mad about politics always tell you they're unsubscribing.
Right.
There's a link at the bottom of the news. You know, they can do it themselves, but they have to tell you, take me off the list.
Right, yeah, and then you can print that, and that's great.
Right.
I love reading those. I love reading those because those people, if they did it right after they sent it to you, then they never got to read their own email in your mailbag. let me ask you the next question. I don't know when this thing is going to go to air. Is it going to go to air within the next 7 days?
Probably.
Okay, so it's going to go to air around the time of your birthday.
Yes.
Your birthday's coming up.
Yes.
And how do you feel about that? Like, this will be your first quarantined birthday. And usually, well, I know you're not a giant birthday. We've had a couple of big birthday parties for you. We had a big 50. We had a big 60. It's going to be your first quarantine birthday. How is that going to feel?
Well, I've had a couple of birthdays that haven't been, as meaningful. I had one. I like to go to the closing week of Vail and go skiing, and especially the closing week was my birthday. The subsequent year, my birthday was the day after closing, and I flew home on an airplane, and so my expectations are not that high, but as I get older, what bothers me about my birthday is it comes and goes so fast. You think about it coming for like 3 months, then it's one day and it already happens. So I have rituals on my birthday.
You won't be able to do them, though.
In 1977, I went for a pastrami sandwich at Langer's, then went to see the movie Annie Hall, and then went for a sundae at a legendary place on Hollywood Boulevard that no longer exists called C.C. Brown's.
Right.
So that's what I do every birthday. Now, the last couple of years, occasionally there hasn't been a good movie, and I've watched Netflix. Always go for the pastrami sandwich. Always have the ice cream. What I'm thinking about is getting a Zabar's send and sort of have my own celebration here. I'm also... The question would be, my sister said, do I want a Zoom birthday party? Now, you had a Zoom birthday party with 30 people, but the only thing about Zoom is it's cacophony. You can't, you know, everyone's talking. It's fun. Everybody's there, but you can't make any progress.
No. Actually, all you have to do is you have to have someone that sort of takes control of the party, right? And in that case, it could be you, where I went around the room and asked everyone to give recommendations on what they'd been streaming and watching so they could hear from other people. So a lot of people were saying, what else are you doing? How are you coping? Everyone got to tell their story. And then at the end, somebody said to me, you know, what did you learn in the past year? And I gave my piece on what I learned in the past year. So I think if you can monitor it and make it seem like it's almost like it's if you're a panel, but there's 30, 40 people there, and give everyone a chance to talk and introduce everyone because I was on first as everyone joined, I would introduce everybody. They would come on. I'd say, hey, everybody, this is so-and-so. And it was like I was the conductor of it. So I think if you're going to have a Zoom birthday party, someone's got to take the reins and do it that way. Otherwise, you're right. It can go crazy. But you also have, you know, the chat bar on the side. If people want to talk amongst themselves, you can tell them.
My only problem is people are not that Zoom savvy, and you send them a message and they're not savvy enough to read it.
Yeah, but if you tell them what it is, you know, like I did a BYOC, bring your own cake, and a whole bunch of people all had a piece of cake. So when I ate the cake that I had, everyone ate cake with me. So
that's a good idea.
Right? I said BYOC. Now, the amount of people that came back with what they saw C stood for, and it wasn't cake, that I had to explain to them what the sea was for. But people, a bunch of people had cake and even had a candle in it, and they blew out the candle when I blew out the candle. So you can make it a theme. You can say dress like Bob, you know, wear your best ski outfit. You can wear ski goggles. You can do whatever you want. But if you want to have fun with it, have fun with it. But you gotta control the flow. If you don't control the flow, it's like I did the podcast the other day with Steiny, and there was six people on the cast, and because he was hosting it, he controlled the flow. So it was much easier to make it work. So it's up to you if you want to control the flow.
But okay, so Jake, before we come to the end of the feeling we've known, any more questions for me?
No, I think I was saving that question for the end. I was actually saving that question, knowing that we're almost at an hour here and we're almost wrapped up.
Okay, well, you know, it's interesting because, you know, they always talk about roadmaps with software, and they always talk about how much runway they have. I will be 67. Most people lie about their age, but you can look it up on Wikipedia. By the same token, there's a lot of fake stuff there. Lior Cohn, Tommy Mottola, they're taking years off. What difference does it make?
Right.
But today, I got the news Brian Dennehy died.
Oh, no.
And last week, it was Alan Garfield, who was in a million movies. And so anyway, Brian Dennehy died. You know, he was a great actor. And you see, he's 81.
Right.
I said, well, shit. My father died at 70. But it's like,
okay, mine at 50. So
you're already in bonus time.
I'm in bonus.
It's like, like people say they want to die in their sleep. I don't want to die in my sleep. I want to see it coming. Okay. I want to know it's the end. But if someone, you know, if you're killed, I'm not going to get killed in a car accident without driving at this time. But, you know, if there's an accident, so be it. But to think there's a limited time left, I feel good about the path I've taken, but it's scary.
Yeah, I guess you can look at it that way, or you can just look at it as, you know, live in the moment, enjoy the time you got. You live, you know, overall, if you had perspective, and I know you have perspective, you look around and see the life you live, you ski, you have good friends that communicate with you regularly, check in on you. You have a great girlfriend. You live a comfortable life. Could be worse. I look around, especially today, and see and literally thank how lucky I am. You know that I'm actually being able to.
Okay. But let's switch to the classic. What is on the bucket list, Jake?
I don't have a bucket list, Bob. I have a fuck it list.
Okay.
Expand that. The fuck it list is, if I feel like I want to go do something, I just go do it. And I say, and I don't look at my bank account, and I don't look at my credit card, and I'm fortunate enough that I can do it. Can I do stupid, really extravagant things by extravagant people's standards? Probably not. Can I do things like, I really like that piece of art and it costs, you know, money, I'm going to buy it? Yeah, I'll go buy it. Because I want to own it and I love art, you know. So
now I know you're a big tennis player. Have you been to all four majors?
Yeah, I've been to all four majors. I've been to a lot of the smaller tournaments as well. I still want to go back to some of them. So that's why I don't really have a bucket list. I have this idea that if I want to go do something, I'm going to go do it. You know, it's funny. Someone says, what are you going to do when all this is over? And I said, I'm going to go to an island. And they said, what, and be alone? I said, well, maybe with somebody else. But, you know, literally shut down from social media, lie in the sun, be on an ocean, and just chill, right? Because even though we're isolated, I wouldn't call it chilling. There's not a lot of chilling going on, especially if you turn on the news. I mean, I got the TV on now. They're saying there's a big announcement coming soon. So it's like, who the fuck knows what's going on? Like every day it changes, right? So.
Oh, it certainly does.
You know.
In any event, I think that's a good note to end on. Jake, thanks so much for doing this.
Be safe, Bob. And I'm sure I'll talk to you, but publicly, happy birthday.
Thank you so much. Till next time, this is Bob Lefsetz.
The hit movie Bob Marley One Love is now streaming on Paramount Plus. Celebrate the life of an icon who inspired generations with his message of love, peace, and unity. Rated PG-13. Head to ParamountPlus.com/OneLove to try it free now.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.